This is the official podcast of the Academy for Women in Academic Emergency Medicine Anniversary Interviews, celebrating 10 years of progress. This is your host, Michelle Lin, and this was a remarkable interview with Dr. Tracy Sanson. She's held leadership roles in the U.S. Air Force, the University of South Florida, and Team Health, and she has some terrific advice about why you should work harder on yourself than you do at your job, and the importance of not doing it alone. Tell me a little bit about where you are currently in your career and how it was that you came to be there.
I'm currently at a crossroads in my career. I'm at that position now of being what we call the sandwich generation, both handling children who are in college as well as elderly parents and the needs that go with both of them. And at that crossroads, I've made some changes in what I do. I was with the University of South Florida for an extended period of time. I was part of the group that started the new emergency medicine residency there, and I was the education director for greater than a decade. In the last several years, I've taken off on my own in a new company that I've developed, as well as moved over to a loose affiliation with the University of Central Florida Emergency Medicine Program. I do, for my emergency medicine now, primarily locums. I will work at various locations that work for my family to be able to interact with them as well as do my shifts. So it both gives me that ability to connect with them, to be in the general area of them, as well as to meet my needs of being who I am, which is an emergency physician. And that's how I have kept the association with the University of Central Florida, is I've done some of my locum shifts at their relatively new emergency medicine program.
Great. And tell me a little bit about your company now and how that evolved.
So my company is Tracy Sanson, MD, TracySansonMD.com, and it grew out of something that I started, about 15 years ago, called Beyond the Medicine. They were non-clinical topics, the professionalism topics, communication, negotiations, just bringing your soul to work. More recently, a direction that I've gone has been in resilience, suicide prevention. How do we handle litigation stress? How do we handle interacting with colleagues? Just life events. What I think you clearly realize, or at least I did, as I've matured through emergency medicine, is that it's all about life. You know, initially we used to worry about maternity leave. Now I worry about, do I have enough time to make it to my mom's chemotherapy treatments, things like that. There are life events all the way across. And through these, we need to navigate as both being humans and emergency physicians and academic emergency physicians. And a lot of that education is missed in our upbringing in medical school and residency. I personally don't have asthma, which I think is fantastic. I cannot count how many hours I've had on asthma education, and yet very little on how to handle divorce, disruption, displacement, disruptive colleagues, all those types of things that I have on almost a daily basis. So that went into my professional speaking career, and that has now become the direction that I go as far as educating folks.
That's terrific and very important. And how has gender played into your career?
So it's interesting. I'm as mature in emergency medicine to remember the days quite often of being the only female. I started as a young medical director, as the only female in that group. I was in the military as a payback for my medical school scholarship, the HPSP program, and at one point was the only female staff attending. We had residents, but relatively few residents. And for me, it became a galvanizer. I will say that my career has been focused on bringing up women with me, and then now as I've moved up and made the connections of making sure that I hold those doors open for the people behind me. I just finished my reign, I guess you would call it, as the president of AWEP, ASEP's American Association of Women Emergency Physicians. And I believe very strongly that we need to be looking out for each other, amplifying and promoting each other, and then as you mature, like I am, of giving those opportunities to the folks that are around me. That's what got me here. When I first started out, it was called Women in Emergency Medicine. It was called WEM. And the people that I remember, Pat Sauber, Ellen Tolliver, Lou Andrews, Diane Feit, who came up and said to me, wow, could you come give this lecture? I remember Diana Feit. She said, I have a domestic violence lecture I need someone to give. I'd like you to do it. And it changed the trajectory of my career. I found that the subject became a passion for me. The idea of speaking became a possibility for me. And it was one woman saying to another one, you can do it. And that's what I have continued to do. My career's been pretty variable. I graduated residency and then had a military payback. So I was in the Air Force. I became vice chair of the department and education director for the, it was a joint Army and Air Force military program. And then I left the military, moved to Florida, where I became a director, medical director of a small ED, then associate director of an even larger ED, and then we started the University of South Florida EM program. I did that, and then I went back out into community again, which is where I am with emergency medicine now. And through all this, I think a constant has been for me is the reconnection with women to allow me back into places that I had stepped away from a little bit. For example, when I was medical director and no longer education director, I had stepped out of the leadership positions in SAEM. Yet when I came back as education director for the University of South Florida, that is who welcomed me right back in. People like Mary Jo Wagner and Millie Willey, who said, Ellen Weber, Gloria Kuhn, who said, come on back in and here's where we are and let me give you these tips, or here's policies we've done, here's a curriculum you can use. That constant ability to step out and step back in as life ebbs and flows with you has been important for moving my career forward.
That's great. Can you point to other initiatives outside of, you know, for example, other opportunities that you might not have otherwise had if it weren't for women-focused career organizations?
I don't know. Several of the things that I was able to take advantage of, for example, being on the pier. I was part of the group that put that together. That was Mary Jo Wagner in our AWEM connection saying, I need you as a writer on this. I was chair of faculty development committee for several years, and the women that I met, comes to mind is Ellen Weber, that would not only champion somebody moving up and into it, or, as in her case, had laid the foundation to begin with that allowed me to take what are my skills and leave an imprint on a community like that. And what I find is that we share and champion. I can't tell you how many times someone said it to me, and I now say it to them, you can do it. Are you crazy? You can do this. And if you can't, then we will find a way to keep this opportunity open for when you can. I don't think we should say, oh, I can't do it because my husband says this, or my child care requires this, or whatever your obstacle may be. We help women look at what their career is at the moment and their life at the moment and say, can I meet whatever this deadline is? One, the size. There used to be 10 of us, and how it has grown from that. What I've also seen is the splintering off, which I think is fascinating to watch. As we've matured and as more women have matured, have taken on leadership opportunities, which then brought it back down to say, we need more chairs of committees. We need more speakers. We need more program directors. We're not making or keeping up with the residents and medical students, the percentage that are females, with the percentage of opportunities and advancement. So there were enough of us who were vocal about that, that the door is starting to creep open. What I've also seen is a willingness to take on those tough topics. You know, it used to be when I first started talking about what I called the beyond the medicine, they were, quote, the soft skills. And they're not. And the tough decisions on lactation rooms. A lactation room that is four floors up and over in OB is not possible as an emergency physician. The being in a little cubbyhole where you don't control the door is untenable for us. And I think it took women and enough women to advance in their careers to say, yeah, I went through that. I'm going to make sure somebody else doesn't. For example, myself personally, I delivered my first children at 29 weeks and began to look into that and the impact of circadian rhythm disruption on preterm labor. And then the impact then of preterm labor on the development of those children, now my and my whole family's life, and then how that impacted my potential, my husband's potential, for the rest of society. Well, that can't happen. So for our program specifically, and then others that we've talked to and who have thought and taken it in, is women do not do nights as residents their last trimester. Now, it's the circadian rhythm disruption, so you could potentially do all nights, not the nights, it's a disruption, but then you can't be at Grand Rounds. So this was a decision born out of who I was, trying to go through emergency medicine and then bringing that out to the people that are around us. And as we became bigger and bigger and more women, it wasn't just eight of us sitting around talking about this, or 20 or 30, it was a couple hundred. And now you had the, I think, need to change it for the people around, but you also had the support. And that's how we started making some of these changes. We still have a way to go on pay transparency, on advancement, those type of things. But what I'm seeing is that we're making those changes where in the past it wasn't even talked about.
You know, having developed this expertise in leadership and these sort of what you describe as non-medical or perhaps softer skills, how do you perceive that leadership in these arenas or leadership in women-focused organizations might be perceived for the purposes of academic advancement, such as promotion?
Well, I think we're going to have to throw our idea of promotion out the window. I really do. So many of the things that we had in the past, because I've gone through the promotion, I've written the letters, I've not been on a committee, but I've talked with the people that are on there, are archaic. The idea that you stayed at one institution for your whole career and therefore developed your notoriety or your niche or whatever it may be doesn't occur anymore. Most of us, and I'm an example of my own, I'm not a millennial, but I'm an example of that, moving and deciding every 3 to 5 years to add more to your own personal career and development. Well, in the archaic old way of advancement, that actually is a detriment for you. The idea of doing research being the only way of advancing, where education wasn't counted as much. Twitter, podcasts, the short, quick articles, the presentations, the high-impact items that impact people globally, yet don't count in the advancement, or at least don't count to the extent that the older ways did it. That's all going to have to change. And I think the idea of getting on this track and continuing straight and only in one direction and on only one time frame does not allow life events. Now, as two women discussing this, we can say one of the life events might be pregnancy or child rearing, but clearly there are enough other life events out there, whether or not they're health issues, family issues, depending on where you live. Right now, if you're in the panhandle of Florida, you are not able to continue what you were doing based on tragedies of a natural type. And I think we need to start responding to life events in how we advance people as well. Because if we don't, we'll lose out on the diversity and the rich, rich potential and skills and talents that everybody has, instead of the old kind of longitudinal track we had.
And tell me a little bit more about how you came to be involved with AWEM specifically.
When I was in SAEM and then looked for people who looked like me or who could commiserate like me, I remember one person specifically was Diane Birnbaumer, who I was able to sit and have those discussions. How did you do this? What would you have done? And AWEM was always a place of safety and of nurturing and of being able to bounce my experiences off in what at that I always felt was very non-confrontational and safe place to discuss.
Yeah, absolutely, very important. And how do you anticipate that AWEM might evolve in the next 10 years to better meet the needs of academic women emergency physicians?
I would like to see a really a needs assessment. Who is AWEM now? I'm not sure we know. What are the ages? What are the ethnicities? What's the sexual orientation? What are the true needs of who's there right now? As you gravitate towards the top, those that are in higher levels of leadership right now still tend to have had very similar, almost vanilla-ish type of experiences. They were tough. I mean, a lot of us were trailblazers in being the only, but we were still pretty homogenous in who we were. That's changed right now, and I'd like us to see what are the real needs. Advancement, things like pay transparency, how about pay disparity? But I think we also have a wider audience who identify as female, who have varying needs, and we need to start meeting those as well. I would like the women who step into either ASEP or SAEM, AWEP or AWEM, to be able to say, there's somebody here who looks like me, and somebody here I can identify with, I can bounce things off, and maybe putting 2, 3, 10 of us together, we can take on whatever our need is and make it better for everybody else. Because almost every time we find, when we've taken something on, let's say we would just talk about lactation rooms or maternity leave. You start talking about lactation rooms, you invariably make it better for the nurses. You invariably make it for somebody else who had an accessibility problem.
What career accomplishment would you say that you're the most proud of?
Oh, wow. I would say it's mentoring. It is. I feel in my career right now, I'm not striving to be the top. There was a time I was going to be chair of this, president of that. I feel like the connections that I have made, the life experiences I've made, the opportunities that I've tried to create or at least kept somewhat open somewhere, my job now is to find somebody else behind me and bring them up and usher them into it, encourage them into it, browbeat them into it, whatever it is. So I would say I'm very proud of being very staunchly pro everybody, clearly the marginalized, and unfortunately, as women, I've felt that marginalization, and I'm going to be pretty damn sure that the people behind me have it a little easier.
What piece of advice do you have for an AWEM member at an earlier stage of her career, or perhaps a younger version of yourself that you didn't know back then?
Wow.
Wish you'd do?
So I have a couple. One of my favorites is work harder on yourself than you do your job. We work harder on our jobs than we do ourselves. And then when the contract's lost or you don't get promoted or you need to move, whatever it is, we're lost. Whereas if I worked harder on myself, if I knew what frustrates me, what motivates me, what my talents are, if I worked on those talents, if I took skills and sharpened them for myself, I'd be a better mother, I'd be a better administrator, program director, whatever it may be. So I think it's to work harder on ourselves than we do our jobs. Another favorite of mine is to say, think, your opinion of me is none of my business. If I'm doing what I'm doing from integrity, with what my values are, and with the best that I can right now based on what's going on in life, that's good enough. We don't have to be perfect at everything. Pick something to be great at and a little better at everything else. That allows you to live life. And then I really have taken this from Brené Brown. Two things hold us back in life. Am I worthy, and will I belong? And I think that's what AWEM does. There's somebody standing next to me saying, yes, you belong. You belong here, you belong in medicine, you belong in academics, and yes, you're worthy. You keep moving forward instead of holding yourself back. Those risks, those opportunities we don't take are usually because of those two questions. Am I worthy and will I belong? Those obstacles that come in our way, which always will, exacerbate those. Oh man, I knew I didn't belong. I knew I wasn't worthy. Whereas if we would take both of those and look for somebody's support and develop us through them, we would do better. One last one is, I love the word yet. We think that life is binary, either or, either I'm good at this or I'm not. Oh man, I'll never be able to do this, or I can't believe I did that. If you would use the word yet for yourself, internally in your own brain, and when you hear somebody else say it, yet gives hope. Yet says to me, okay, I didn't get that promotion. They made the wrong decision. They'll have to live with that. I'm not a chair yet. It's very different from I'm not a chair. I wasn't that material yet. With a better committee, with more skills, with a different time, with a different place, it's a possibility. And so I would say, as a teacher, I think there are two things for us as faculty. My job is to make sure that you come out as the best possible, credible emergency physician. You could take care of my mother, my daughter. The second is that you remain employed. And with that need to become employed, you have to have those soft skills, those communication, negotiations, those ability to interact with people, those social skills. And when we hit those roadblocks, which sometimes will stop us, that word yet, okay, whatever it was, yet I can move on to whatever the other thing is with a new skill, more time, sometimes even a Snickers bar or a good night's sleep.
Yep, those definitely make a big difference sometimes. Name three other AWEM members we should interview for this project.
Oh, well, have you done Mary Jo Wagner? Okay, Mary Jo Wagner. Valerie Dobiez, a new young one starting a new program, Sarah Temple in Sarasota. Stacy, Marlo Fisher. These are all folks that, Gabrielle Jacquet. All of these folks are people that are at various stages and have talents and skills and nurturing abilities and tenacity and discipline that all are having an impact in their own little niches that I think they can have words of wisdom for the folks around them.
Anything else I haven't asked about AWEM or about yourself that you'd like to share?
Don't do it alone. I think don't do it alone, and that's what women's groups do. When you get lonely and when you get isolated for whatever reason it is, you're the only mother with premature twins, or you're the only woman in the program, or the only one lactating, or the only researcher and no one else is, there are so many ways you can find I'm the only. And I'd like to flip that around, that there are people just like you, we just need to look for them. And a group like AWEM has I think, the ownership to start reaching out and pulling people in so that we are not alone.
Thanks again for tuning in. Join us next week for our interview with Dr. Elizabeth Goldberg, a rising star in geriatrics research at Brown, who tells us how AWEM provided her with role models and mentors. See you next time.